The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's right. Here we go again. Another hour of the best in money information. If I do say so myself, and I do believe that, we got more at the Brain Trust, more of the Bucket Strategy Investing program. We got folks standing by, our pencils sharpened, our calculators fully charged. Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group is standing by with me. Johnny Dean, we're here to help you out on the program. Now, we got answers to more of your money questions. That's all coming up here in just a moment. And right now, you got the opportunity to take part in the show. Our lines are open. You give us a call, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Spells out PLANNER. The Brain Trust is here for you. So right now, I would say great time to get on board with the show. You can also get in touch with us via the email system. You go to wealthhead.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page, and we'll read your emails right here in the studio. Now, we didn't get to reverse dollar cost averaging. If you're listening in the previous hour, we just had too many calls and some other stuff to get to. So I'd like to sometime this hour talk about the reverse side of dollar cost averaging, which is a strategy that if you're using, I would suggest perhaps that there are better ways to distribute your money in retirement. So we're going to tell you what it is and perhaps how to get rid of it after we take some phone calls. Now, we do make it our goal each day on the show to give you the best in money information. This is what we call wealth education. And you can get in touch with the Brain Trust, both on and off the air. If you want to set up a face-to-face meeting with Lucia Capital Group advisors, any of them, including Professor Plum, if you want to schedule an appointment or you just have a question, whatever needs to be answered, you call Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. Your individual goals and needs require a financial plan that's uniquely tailored to you and your goals. Again, the number at Lucia Capital Group off the air, 800-644-1150. All right. 877-PLANNER, our number. We're going to take a couple of calls here. We will get into all the stuff that we haven't had a chance to get to and more this hour, but you folks can direct the show with your questions. 877-PLANNER. Let's go first this hour to Steve in Thornton, Colorado. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing today?
No, not bad. Hey, I got a Social Security question. See if you guys could explain to me how to figure this. If I'm going to, my wife and I are basically the same age, and I'm not going to take my Social Security till at least full retirement age. And she's like a month behind me.
How old are you right now?
Okay.
How old are you right now?
Oh, I'm 60.
So your wife is 60 as well?
No, well,
almost.
A little behind.
1 month behind you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, well, I don't fall into that. Well, I'm excluded from the new rules, right?
Ron? Yep. You're just not old enough.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, so I don't plan on at least till I'm full retirement age to take mine, which would be 2600.
Okay.
And then I'm thinking on her, as soon as she hits 62, we're going to thinking about turning hers on. So and her full retirement would be 1083. So at 62, according to the calculations, taking it early, it'd be 788.
Mm-hmm.
That sound about right?
That sounds real close, yeah.
Okay. So now once she gets to full retirement, her full retirement age, mm-hmm. which would be basically when I hit it also, can she step up to my spousal or a portion of it?
She can. She will step up to a portion of it. Once you apply for your benefit.
Right.
Yeah, let's assume you apply at 66 and she applies at 66, or you apply at 66 in 1 month because she's 1 month younger than you. It makes the math
right.
A lot easier. And she applies at the same time for a spousal retirement benefit because she becomes eligible for a spousal retirement benefit once you apply for your own benefit.
Right.
Now, she will not step up to the full 50% number. She won't step up to the $1,300 a month number. She will step up to, and the number that she will step up to is equal to the difference between 1300 and 1083. Her benefit at that time and the spousal benefit at that time. So she'll pick up another $217 a month added to what she's already receiving for her own benefit.
Oh, okay.
Still money, still good enough.
And the reason for that, Professor Plum, let's
explain.
Well,
if she starts her benefit early, the penalty that she took or the discount that she took in her benefit will continue she's going to continue to receive her benefit. And so she's already locked in her benefit. So when she ultimately becomes eligible for a spousal benefit, they're not going to look to what she's actually receiving. They're going to look at what is her benefit at that time, and what is the spousal benefit at that time. And that becomes the difference. That becomes the spousal benefit, the difference between the two. She only gets the difference between her benefit and the spousal benefit. She doesn't get both of them. She gets one stacked on top of the other. And they're going to look at her benefit as if she was applying for it at that time. And that at that time, it's 1083.
Okay, so you subtracted what from what to get that 217?
1300, which is 50% of your benefit.
Okay.
Minus 1083. Hopefully I did the math right.
Okay. All right, I see that.
Yeah. And so the difference, what it is, Steve, when we talk about the spousal benefit is simply that difference. Her benefit, since she's already got hers, her benefit, and then on top of that, the spousal benefit is the extra 200, whatever it was.
If she had never paid into Social Security and she didn't have a pension or any of that nature, the difference between hers, zero, and yours at that time, 1300, is 1300. She'd receive the entire 1300. But because she took hers early, they're going to look at her benefit. But they look at it at a point in time. The fact that she took a discount in hers is going to remain.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what happens when you take it early. The discount that she takes in her own benefit also applies to the spousal benefit, because that's where they used to start it.
Now, the nice thing about this, though, is it does not apply to the survivor benefit. And that's one reason why taking yours later will do potentially some good if either one of you lives a long time. And then let's say that, unfortunately, you died at too young of an age at 74, 75, and you're receiving your $2,600 a month plus whatever COLAs have happened since then. She will drop, instead of having the difference tacked on top of hers, she drops hers, she drops the spousal because it's not available anymore because you're not here, and she turns it into a survivor benefit. And as long as she's full retirement age or older when she applies for a survivor benefit, she gets what you are receiving.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense? I know it can get confusing, Steve.
Right. So that discount, the discount that's figured in, it's actually the dollar amount, not the percentage.
Yeah, it's going to be a percentage if she applies early, but yes.
Right. Well, you figure that in order to get her original 62, that's the percentage. But the discount that she took, you take that dollar amount and subtract it then.
Basically, but it's more complicated because of cost of living allowances going forward. And so it's an easiest way to look at it that we can come up with.
Yeah.
This scenario, the 217 would be the difference.
Right. The difference between what her benefit is. I mean, her benefit's going to grow over the next couple of years. Your benefit's going to grow over the next couple of years because of cost of living allowances. But this is the easiest way to calculate it and to explain it.
Okay. Yeah. It's clear as mud now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the way it is. This is where it would be if there were no cost of living adjustments. You'd probably have the dollar amount correct, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And we pray that there are cost of living adjustments.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Does that help you out, Steve?
It does. It helps a lot. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for the call. Yeah, we get questions on this all the time. And the nature of how it's, I don't know if it's because of the wording of it or what, but it can get really confusing.
Well, it also is because we want to have that higher benefit. We're being told that the spousal benefit is equal to 50% of the worker's full retirement age benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want, and I'm not eligible to apply for it. His wife won't be eligible to apply for it at 62 because he hasn't applied for it. So a lot of people believe that, well, once he or she becomes eligible for the spousal retirement benefit at full retirement age, they're going to get the full 50% number. Well, in the logic, the Social Security Administration logic, they are getting the 50% number reduced by their benefit. But they're not reducing it by the benefit they're receiving. They're reducing it by the benefit at that time.
Yeah.
That's their logic. Their benefit at that time is whatever the number was. In this case, it was 1,083 projected. So they're not reducing it by what the person is actually receiving. Same thing happens in the family maximum. If I'm 62 years of age and I apply for my retirement benefit, I'm not working, but I have a dependent child, maybe a spouse that's at home taking care of me. Let's just make it easy. A couple dependent children. And we're running up against the family maximum. they're going to look at my benefit. The kids are eligible for a family, an individual benefit equal to 50% of my benefit, my full retirement age benefit. So they're going to look at the family maximum, though. The family maximum is probably, call it 180% of my benefit. Well, the first thing they're going to do is pull my benefit out of it. And my benefit in that calculation is always 100%. Even though I'm only receiving 75% of it because I took it early, they pulled 100% out of the family maximum because that's my benefit.
Oh, now see, I followed that, but I've heard the explanation so many times that it makes sense to me. But it may not make sense to you if you're watching or listening. So if that's the case, you can certainly give us a call. We'll talk to you more about it. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We have a couple of lines open. In fact, we had another Social Security question somewhere on the list. I think it was, yes, June. So June, hold on just a moment or two, if you would. We're going to come right back to you and give you enough time to ask your question. We'll answer it for you there in West Palm Beach. Three lines open, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Bucket Strategy Investing continues. Oh, yeah. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Shoop doo wop. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Talking about your money, and we got some folks on hold, so we're going to get right back to the calls. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We had a few more questions on Social Security and other things, so we're going to get right to those. And we will, as I promised, we'll get to some of those emails as well. But back to the phone lines. June, up next. Thanks for hanging on, June, West Palm Beach, Florida. How can we help you today?
I was listening to your show, as I often do.
Thank you.
And I took Social Security at 62. I'm 67 now. My husband took it at full retirement. Is it too late for me to step up to spousal on him?
No, you can if there's a benefit there. How much are you receiving right now, June?
Nine and change.
How much is your husband's benefit?
18 and change.
You're not going to be able to get a benefit. You started early, which meant that you received a reduced benefit. You would have received $1,200 and change if you had waited until full retirement age.
Her benefit.
If you had waited for your benefit, would have been $1,200 or so for your own benefit at full retirement age. His benefit is $1,800, which means that at your full retirement age, the spousal benefit is $900-ish.
Okay.
Your benefit at full retirement age is higher than the spousal benefit from his work at full retirement age, meaning you're not getting anything.
Anything extra. Well, she'll still get
You'll keep getting yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the spousal benefit in this case is not large enough.
It's not larger than yours.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, I wish we had better news for you, June.
Well, that's all right.
Well, and now you know that you're not missing out on something so you can just put that part of it to rest. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
Right. Well, the reason we did it is I think at that time everything crashed, so I wasn't going to work anyway. So I said, "Well, we might as well take it now."
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I don't think it wasn't a bad choice. I mean, now, Professor, if she had waited, it wouldn't have mattered.
She wouldn't get a spousal now either.
She
would have given up the $900 and change for the last 5 years, four years.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. And then she would have. How many years you takes to catch up to?
It takes a little while.
Yeah.
No. Do you have longevity in your family, June? Do you or your husband?
He does.
Okay. Well, so, you know, that's okay.
I didn't think I did until I started doing Ancestry, that Ancestry.com stuff, and I found out there was a lot of longevity. So, you know, it's a crapshoot.
Ah, yeah, but hey, you know what? If you live long, that's fine. You know what? Who cares? You live past the break-even age, great. You know what?
Yeah.
Not going to matter at that point, right?
That's right.
Okay.
You die the day before you run out of money.
That's the whole point. I think that's what it is. If you can time it, you let us know how to figure out how to do that, okay?
I will.
All right, June. Thank you very much for the call.
The day after works, too, although we don't have the float on the checks anymore. But it'll take them a little while to get back to it.
Oh, by the time they catch up to it. That's true. Yeah. Yeah, we'll explain more about this Social Security and the spousal benefit. I think part of the problem comes, Professor Plum, because when you say I'm going to receive a spousal benefit, it sounds like there's an extra an extra amount.
I'm in addition to what I'm already getting.
Right. So if I'm getting $900 a month and there's a spousal benefit of $900, I should be able to get a $900 plus a $900.
Yeah, that doesn't work that way.
Well, they don't do it that way, but the way it's the just the terminology sounds like that's what you get. And so that's where a lot of the confusion comes in. Okay, moving along, Ling is next, Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Ling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Love your show.
Thank you. How can we help you?
Okay, the other day I heard you, John, saying something about first IMD, something about 69. And normally I know it was 70 and a half you have to take IMD, right?
Right.
And then I need you to help me, you know, how did you compute it? If you're taking the 69, for instance, if Professor saying, you know, his birthday is like June.
Yes.
So it
yes.
means June 1st. Probably if 70 and a half, you won't take it until June 30th next year,
well,
right?
My birthday is at the end of June. We were talking about the required minimum distribution is not due the day you turn 70 and a half. It's due in the year you reach 70 and a half. And any distribution in that year counts as a required minimum distribution, even if you're not even 70 by the time you take it. I use myself as an example. My birthday's at the very end of June, towards the end of June. And so I don't turn 70 and a half until towards the end of December. I don't turn 70 and a half in that year until after Christmas.
Right.
And so I don't have to wait until December 27th, 28th, 29th to take a distribution and have it count for my required minimum distribution. In that year, I could take a distribution.
But in that year, if we're assuming it was June 30th, and then end of the year, you only 70.
I'm 70 and a half in that year.
Yeah, June 30th. That December 30th will mark the 70.
You're right,
and
but
a
I
half.
Am only yeah. 70 in that calendar year.
Right.
So how do I calculate my required minimum distribution? I take the balance at the end of the previous year of my IRA, divided by the life expectancy factor the IRS has given us for the age that I did or will attain that year. So how old will I be at the end of the year? I'll be 70 years old. So I look at the 70-year-old life expectancy factor and divide the end of last year's balance by that life expectancy factor to calculate how much I need to take out. Now, I can do that in January of that year. And I could take my required minimum distribution on January 20th.
Even though at that time,
I'm only 69 years old.
69 and a half.
A little over 69 and a half. But I know what last year's. I know that I'm going to reach 70 and a half this year, sometime this year. I know that my balance as of the end of last year was X. I know how old I will be at the end of the year. So I have all the information I need to have. I can do the required minimum distribution as soon as I can get the balance for December 31st of last year.
Yeah, and that's where the age 69 conversation came into place.
Yeah, but I'm still kind of still fuzzy because if it was 16, how could it 69 jump to 70 and a half? If you take it at a 70, it won't count, right?
No,
it counts.
Yeah.
Any distribution from January 1st, if you can get anybody to make a distribution on January, let's call it January 2nd, to December 31st, in the year that I turn 70 and a half, counts as my required minimum distribution. How old, if my birthday's in June, how old am I in January? If I turn 70 in June, how old am I in January? I'm 69 and a half, a little over, 69 and 7 months, whatever you want to call it, but I'm not 70 and I'm not 70 and a half, but sometime during that 12-month window, I will reach 70 and a half.
Right.
Now, but use this example. If June 1st is a birthday,
yep.
And then December 1st is 70 and a half,
right.
then if between the end of the year, you will be that will be 70 and a half. But what happened, like if a person was born in January 1st, and then the end of the year, December 31st.
I'm still 70 and a half by the end of the year.
Huh?
I'm still 70 and a half by the end of the year. I still have a required minimum distribution.
Right, and any distribution you take out during the course of that year will count. So Ling, if you need some more explanation, please hold on. We can talk to you off the air about this. I know it's confusing, and I want to make sure you get the answer that you need. So hold on, or if you have other questions. Nicole in Spokane, you're going to be next up. So if you can stick around just a couple of moments, we'll pay a few bills, and we'll come back. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, it is Bucket Strategy Invest. Okay, actually, you call us. We can't call you because we don't have your number. You have ours, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. A little bit of room on the phones. We will get to you momentarily if you can hang very quickly. Okay, let's get back to the lines, 877-752-6637. Hank, Spring Valley, California, next. Hi, Hank.
Well, good morning to you. Got a quick question, maybe a long answer. On Social Security, as regards a friend of mine, she's worried about her husband passing away. He currently receives $1,200. She receives $400.
Okay.
And I understand that when if he passes away, she will step up to the $1,200. Understand that, but she's concerned about his ex-spouse. They were married for more than 10 years. I believe she's now receiving Social Security based on the relationship.
Okay.
My question is, and really the current spouse is concerned, is will the current spouse lose any of that $1,200 to the ex-spouse, or is she a complete separate transaction with the Social Security Administration?
The good news is that the ex has nothing to do with the current spouse. You know, the current spouse did not lose any of the spousal benefit because the ex is taking some. The current spouse will not lose any of the survivor benefit, but the ex will get the survivor benefit. So this is an area where both these ladies will receive $1,200 a month if this gentleman were to pass away.
All right. Okay.
Doesn't matter. You know, he could have five ex-wives as long as they were married for at least 10 years and now they're divorced, and, you know, it doesn't matter. They all get a benefit, and it does not affect the current spouse in any way, shape, or form.
That's what she wanted to hear, so I appreciate that information. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right, Hank, thank you for the call. Yeah, once again, it's not like a pension, where pensions...
There's only so much money to get spread around between everybody.
Right.
Social Security has an unlimited resource. They can give out benefits to everybody if they want,
and they do. They have infinite dollars available to them.
Now, the good news on this is that the survivor benefit's not going to reduce the retirement trust fund at all because it comes out of a different trust fund.
Oh, okay, good. That's good news. That's wonderful news. Wow. Gee whiz. Running out of dollars. It's an amazing thing. Hank, thank you, Hank.
Yes.
I appreciate that. William is up next, Augusta, Georgia. Hi, William. How can we help you today?
Fine. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
Wonderful. I've got actually a couple of questions. I don't know if I can get both of them in.
Sure, go right ahead.
The main one is, you know, I took my Social Security early a couple of years ago, 62, I'm down 64, and I've caught myself where I've made over the $15,200 once, and they took some of my checks back, you know, that exposed, you know, which if you pay so much in, you got to pay it back. Question is, you know, it's April now this year. If I continue, you know, and I haven't worked any at all this year, which I'm okay, but let's say at the end of this year, January 1st, 2017, I want to go back to work and work that entire year and call the Social Security Board and say, hey, stop my benefits for 2017. Can I do that, or do I have to pay back the previous 2 years?
No, you. In fact, you're not allowed to pay back the previous 2 years. You can. So let's say you're going to go back to work January 1st, 2017, and you know that you're going to make more than the $15,720 or whatever it goes up to for 2017. You know you're going to make more than that. You know they're going to ask for the benefit back. You know you're going to have to pay it back if they give it to you. But they're only going to take away the benefit for that year, not for the previous years. So if you know that's going to happen and you know you're going to make more money, give them a call. You know, right after you get your first paycheck and say, Mr. and Mrs. Social Security Administration, I am working and therefore I'm going to be ineligible for this benefit. So I would like to stop receiving that benefit now so that I don't have to pay it back to you later. And they should stop it until you start earning money, or until you stop earning money.
So I could work another couple of years, and then would that increase my benefits?
Oh, yes. It's like you did not receive, if you paid it back, or if you're not receiving it, then when you ultimately do start receiving it, it's as if it wasn't reduced for taking it early. So let's say you started at 62, you received your benefit for the entire year 62, but then at 63, for 62 and 63, you got your entire benefit. For 64, you go back to work, and you work from 64, 65, and then 66 comes around. There is no retirement earnings test at 66. Now, when you took the benefit at 62, they reduced it quite a bit. They reduced it by
I believe this time I'd get another. I'd get from $733, I'd get $933.
Right.
Another couple hundred dollars involved.
Right. They're going to look at it as how many months did you receive it while you were under full retirement age? If you received it for 24 months and then didn't receive it for the next 24 months, when you fully get to full retirement age 66, they're going to say, yeah, he took it at 62, but then he didn't take it from 64 or 65. So it's as if he took it at 24 months early. So they're going to recalculate it based on the number of months that you received it, as if you had taken it that many months earlier. Now, we'll automatically start again at 66 if you don't turn it back on before that.
So it wouldn't actually go up. It would probably be about the same.
No, it's going to go up. It's going to go up nicely.
It would go up. Okay.
Yeah, it'll go up nicely. Now, when you turn it on at 66, it's not going to look like the 66 benefit because you took it early. You took 2 years worth of it early, or 18 months, or however many months you received.
But by telling them to stop,
you don't have to pay them back.
Yeah, and by telling them to stop, you're essentially, even though it's not called this, you're essentially suspending the benefit. You're just suspending it by working, and you're telling them to stop. They will stop it. But while it's under suspension, they will continue to grow those benefits.
Right, because of the interest, I guess.
Because you didn't take it early. It won't be reduced as much for taking it early.
Exactly.
It'll be reduced a little bit for taking it early, but not the entire reduction.
Yeah.
And this is the other concern, and I don't know if anybody else, I'm in a real crazy situation, the way I call it, but my wife had a real crazy cancer years back, and she's on what they call SSI.
Right.
Yes.
And her reduced amount is like $380 because of my $722 income.
Right.
And what it is, I found out through the Social Security Board, and I think I'm correct, this is the main question, is if you put our two incomes together, which is $733 and $385, as me being married, husband, wife for 30 years or whatever, they were saying that I can't make but $1,100 a month total income for my, and there's no children involved, just being my wife.
That's the SSI rules.
$1,100 total for the whole month. If I went out and got a job, made $54, you know, for the whole month, or if I went somewhere and made $100 a month, $100 a month.
Right, right.
That would actually cut her complete Social Security, her SSI. And her Medicaid slap off because
It would cut the SSI benefit.
Figure.
Yeah, that's the SSI rule.
Even though you didn't exceed the 15,720 at that rate, you would exceed the family household income for her her ability to receive SSI. And so it's the SSI that's being affected first, more so than the Social Security. Social Security will be affected if you make more than 15,720 in a year. The SSI is going to be affected if you make more than the number you mentioned because of the way it lays out. So she will be affected sooner than you will.
Is that $1,100 a person per household?
That's probably family income.
Total.
It's probably family income. I don't know what the income is structured like, and I don't have the rules for SSI memorized as well as Social Security. But that's probably when a married couple has a very low income, they look at household income. So it doesn't matter whether she's making it, you're making it, or wherever. It's household income.
Right, so I'm 733 and she's 380, so that's $1,080 a month.
Right, and so you run the risk.
We barely making it on that.
I understand that. but these are the rules set forth by SSI.
Right. So therefore, I can't go get a job making even $25 a week if I do at a cut her complete benefits out.
I don't know the exact thresholds for SSI, but if that's the number they told you, that's how it's going to work.
Yeah. Does that help you out?
Okay, well, I appreciate your courtesy, and you got a great show, and thank you very much.
All right, thank you for calling, William. Yes, SSI, Supplemental Social Income or
Insurance.
Which is really designed for people that don't have any assets or any income, that kind of thing.
Right, and it's typically not common in a married situation. It's usually a
single
individual.
Because you have somebody who's making...
Because most people that have a married situation have more income than the thresholds for receiving SSI.
Yeah, exactly.
It's unfortunate for this situation because I can't imagine trying to make it on $1,100 a month.
I can't either. And
especially two people.
Yeah, two people. It's got to be very difficult. Okay, William, thank you for the call. We got to take a break. Okay, well, hang on. If you're on hold, we got more coming up. We have some more emails to get to, or at least an email or two to get to, and some trivia. And the reverse dollar cost averaging, I haven't even had a chance to get that. We had a lot of good calls, though. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. If you got a question, call now. We're running out of time. Coming back on Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Didn't get to cover everything today that we had set out to do, but that's just what happens on this program. And we take our calls first. We're perfectly happy to talk about whatever it is on your mind, whatever is on your mind, and we'll answer the questions here at 877-PLANNER. Now, coming up tomorrow, among many other things, as I usually say, we're going to talk about pension maximization. That's the plan anyway. Pension maximization and life insurance strategies in general. So what does that mean? Well, it means that you got a pension and maybe you have to take a reduction in your pension because you got a spouse and you want it to, the pension to continue after you're gone. So you have to take a reduction in the amount that your pension is going to pay you. Well, is there any way that maybe you could take the full amount and still provide for your spouse? Well, yes. It's a process that's known as pension maximization. So we'll tell you how to perhaps, potentially, do that using your strategy. Okay, that's coming up tomorrow. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Before we get to the trivia, I want to take another call or two. Next would be Jason in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Jason.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you today?
Great. Hey, I have a question about my asset allocation. Basically, I have somewhere between 44 and 45,000 in dividend-paying stocks, around a little over 29,000 in a bank savings account, and about $2,000 in a regular IRA. What do you think of my asset allocation?
How old are you, Jason?
40.
And when you say you have $2,000 in an IRA, how is that invested? An IRA is an account.
It's just a regular
savings account.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Part of it's Roth. Part of it's traditional.
Okay. I don't like that. You've got 19 and a half years before you can touch that money. It does not need to be sitting in a savings account. That should be invested for growth, long term growth. The 29,000 in CDs. Now, what do you feel comfortable keeping as an emergency fund?
Well, I don't know. I suspect I might be a little rich on that end.
Okay. I mean, and that's the reason for the CDs, is your emergency fund. Let me ask you, do you have any credit card debt?
Nope.
Any automobile debt?
Nope.
See, you're doing great there. I like that. So now you just have to identify how much money you need to have as an emergency fund. And if it's $29,000, that's fine. That's your emergency fund. Keep it in rolling CDs, whatever the case may be there. But the rest of your portfolio should be invested for growth. You're 40 years old. You're working. You don't need to withdraw any money from this portfolio, with the exception of emergencies, for probably 10 or 15 years or longer, right?
There could be some variables in that. Maybe... maybe I'll need the money. Probably not $29,000, but it just.
Well, that's why you have the $29,000. So the idea is to identify how much money you need to keep in cash. For right now, I don't have a problem with the $29,000 because you might need a good chunk of it, and you still need a little emergency fund over and above that. But the rest of the money, the IRA, the money that's in stocks, you know, that should be invested for long-term growth. Dividend-paying stocks are a form of long-term growth. Whether I would do 100% of it in dividend-paying stocks or I would do a portion of it in dividend-paying stocks, some of it in more growth-oriented stocks, maybe some in smaller company stocks, I might even throw some international in there as well. But stocks and stock type investments, stock mutual funds, stock ETFs, things like that, make a lot of sense for everything that's not an emergency fund for you. So the first step is to determine whether $29,000 is too rich. I don't necessarily have a problem with the $29,000. That's your call. It's what makes you, it's whatever lets you sleep well at night. The IRA definitely should be invested for long-term growth because it's a long-term account. You can't really even touch it for 19 years. And then the other portfolio, unless there's an identifiable reason for spending the money in the next 10 or 15 years, invest it for growth. It's currently invested for growth. I don't have a problem with that, but I might expand my diversification a little bit more outside of just that one sector, that one type of stock, and I might go with more growth-oriented for a portion of it, some international, some small cap as well.
Okay. All right.
And just keep funding the living heck out of it and build it up.
Okay. I think you asked what was 6 months of expenses for me. Well, probably about, $15,000.
Okay. Are you self-employed? Do you work for the government? Do you work somewhere in between those two?
No, I have an employer.
Okay. Whether you need 6 months, that's up to you. If you've got a very stable job that's unlikely to lose it, that would be a government job, you don't necessarily need 6 months of expenses. But on the other side, you said you're going to have a large withdrawal potential and keeping 3 to 5, 6 months of expenses. That's your emergency fund. The rest of it, keep investing for growth. Keep investing in a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. Keep investing. All the money that's not going to credit cards, all the money that's not going to a car loan, start investing it. Get the systematic savings going.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Thank you for the call, Jason. He's doing okay from a debt standpoint,
for sure.
He doesn't have any debt, which is can be a real drag down to take the savings down.
He's 40 years old and he's got a decent sized portfolio. He just needs to start working on it more by saving. He's doing fine.
Yeah, he's doing fine. And he was asking about his asset allocation. He was concerned about money that he can't touch really until age 59 and a half.
The IRA.
Right. And I don't know how much of that. It was like two grand.
It's not a big number yet, but he needs to fund into his Roths or his traditional IRAs.
Right. But on the traditional side, since he can't touch that money until age 59 and a half, he's 40. He's got 20 years, basically, until he has to get to it. That's why that should be invested for some kind of growth.
The time horizon allows for a growth investment. He's not going to spend it. He's not even supposed to touch it. It's heavily penalized if he does touch it, so it's going to be left alone for 20 years. Go for growth with that, not a bank account. Bank account doesn't do you anything on money you're not going to touch for 20 years. Now, on the other side, the bank account money he has, that should be a bank account because there's a chance he may spend it in the not-too-distant future. Emergency fund and current expenditures, soon-to-be expenditures, keep those in cash. Everything else, he's 40. Grow it.
Well, IRA, the R is retirement.
Retirement.
And so if you're not going to retire for 20 years, it's probably a good idea.
And the A is account, not an investment. It is an account. So just saying you have an IRA doesn't tell anybody what it's actually invested in. Now, he has it at a bank, which says it's invested in a savings account. That's not the right investment for an IRA for somebody 40 years old.
No, it's not. And that's why we talk about what we talk about. Okay. Well, thanks again for the call. Liz, hold on a second because we're going to talk to you in about 60 seconds. So don't go away in Scottsdale. If you need the brain trust, you want to talk to Professor Plummer, any of the Lucia Capital Group advisors off the air, you can reach them, oddly enough, at their off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. For Professor Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.